My name is Leo, and you're listening to a special edition of After Hour Projects in celebration of Asian Heritage Month. My conversation today is with Rick Hugh. Rick is the founder and CEO of Midas Wealth. Prior to founding Midas Wealth, Rick was the managing director of Northwestern Mutual's Chinatown office, which he built at just 25 years old. He's a recipient of many awards and distinctions for his sustained vision, outstanding leadership, and client commitment. He's a frequent speaker both at home and internationally, where he teaches clients and other financial professionals about financial planning. Rick recently spoke at the Asian Hustle Network Uplifted Conference and was featured in a video by the Fung Bros. This episode was a real treat. We go deep into Rick's story on becoming who he is, applying both Eastern and Western values to create the special sauce that has contributed to his success, both professionally in his career, as well as personally in his relationships with his parents and children. Lastly, stay tuned until the very end for a special announcement. Rick, it's really great to have you on the show. And I'm also excited because this is actually my first in-person podcast recording.
Great. And for starters, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. Leo, you're doing an amazing job. It's an honor to give back and record for this podcast and give back to our community.
I just wanted to ask, how's everything going for you?
Things are great. This year has been off to an amazing start. As many people know, I'm in finance. So far, year to date, the market is up. It's amazing and off to an amazing start.
First thing I wanted to talk about is becoming who you are. So we know your background. We know what you've accomplished. I want to understand first, what really motivated you? So growing up, who were some of your inspirations?
So growing up, my inspirations were, like many of people out there, my parents. My father, my mother, they came to America in the 1970s, and they had me in the 1980s, and I'm their only child. I'm a really traditional, family-oriented person, but as much as I admired and adored my parents, unfortunately, they weren't really there for me. And it's not that they didn't want to be there, but like many Asian families, they were constantly working.
Just to quickly chime in here, for me, so my personal experience growing up was, so I was born in America, and then when I was 8 months old, I actually spent time living with my grandparents in Shanghai from when I was 8 months old all the way up until I was 2 years old. And the reason why was because my parents were working in America. Like, they immigrated here. My parents really started from humble beginnings and really worked their way up to becoming who they were. And that took that sacrifice.
Incredible. And frankly, for many of us that are listening, how many of us share a similar story? Because like you, I was raised more by my grandparents. So my parents were working 7 days a week, 15, 16 hour days. And I rarely saw them. They would go to work before I wake up and they'll come home after I was put to bed. So I admired them, I adored them, I loved them, but I didn't really have much chance to be with them. So they were the ones that motivated me. They inspired me. They allowed me to be, that shaped me to who I am. But if you ask me today, who motivates me more today, it's actually the version I want to be in the future. So my future me motivates me to be who I am today.
Yeah, that's super powerful. There's something that you mentioned before about affirmations. I want you to talk more about that because it's that intrinsic motivation. It is super powerful. I think you've mentioned before too that back then in the past, you never really imagined like how you would be who you are right now. And so when you think about the future, you, that gives you excitement. But tell me more about those like affirmations.
Those affirmations of my future growth and my thoughts of the where I can be and where we can grow as individuals really come from the simple fact that I failed so much majority of my life. So I generally tell people when they say, hey, Rick, how did you get to where you are today? My answer may be simple and may not be what they want to hear is I failed more than most people out there. And wherever I am today, I truly believe this is not the final destination. My motivation is the excitement and the opportunity to not really think much about my past or my present, but my potential.
Yeah, and that's really interesting because the whole thing about failure, you've come to grow comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's really where the growth happened. Just really grateful for you for sharing that, especially as someone who has been able to overcome a lot of these failures and then achieve that success. So one thing that you mentioned was the hard work. I think there's another component in terms of working smart. Tell me more about that and your point in what you did on like listening to your clients, and that sort of helped you really advance your career. What exactly were you doing to really get that initial success in your business?
Sure. So early definition of my career was I was the typical Asian professional that was raised by really traditional Eastern world parents. They taught me to work hard because that's what they did, but they never really taught me how to work smart. And being on many stages, I've shared this story. My parents unconsciously raised me to fail in Western America and in finance. Growing up, they said, as an Asian person, I should not raise my hand and speak up when I had my own opinions. I should not look at people in the eyes when you speak to them because it may come off rude. And when it comes to shaking hands with others, I should be shaking it with two hands to show respect. What's wrong about that is working hard. Unfortunately, I don't believe America is really like Asia. Coming into the office the earliest and staying the latest has really no definition or does not define your success. It's the people that come in and get results.
Exactly.
Not speaking up in Western society and especially in finance means you have no opinion, you do not have confidence in who you are, and the thoughts that you may possess. When you look at someone in the eyes, it means confidence. When you do not look at people in the eyes, like my Asian parents taught me, because it may be rude, it's lack of confidence, and possibly you're not honest. And then finally, when you shake people's hands with two hands, showing them respect, that's great. But oftentimes, when you do so, people receiving that type of emotion, they might actually look down on you. So I was indirectly putting people on pedestals when I shouldn't have. And quite frankly, Eastern ways, there's a lot of ageism. Just because someone is older than you, which is why I teach my children, does not mean you automatically need to respect them. Respect is not demanded, it's earned. So early on in finance, my habits or my conditioning as a young child actually made me fail. So my first 6 months in finance, I struggled. And eventually, I was put on probation to be terminated. But I went through trials and tribulation, and I went through a period where I spoke to my parents, and I asked them, you know, what should I do? I'm not doing well in finance. And they gave me the exact words that I needed. They said, son, you should quit. Come back and join the family's business. Finance is not right for you. And it was at that moment when I realized my parents told me how I should live my life, and my peers said I was no good, that I stopped listening to others, and I started developing a skill, which is I started talking to myself. Did you know the average person has 7 negative thoughts a minute, hundreds an hour to thousands a day? But instead of listening to others' negative thoughts and opinion of who you are, and instead of even listening to yourself, we should get into the habit of talking to yourself. So to answer your question about my career and what got me to my journey was a lot of experience, failures, but it's a lot of affirmation I had to say to myself, which allowed me to be who I am today.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really that self-belief. Like, there were people who didn't believe in you, but then you believed in yourself and you were able to make it from there. Just shifting gears a little bit, during that time when you did get promoted to managing director, that was like a whole new world to you, and especially at such a young age. What was it like?
It was like a dream come true. I remember at 21 years old, when I interviewed with my managing director, my dreams and aspiration was to be a managing director in 20 years. I wrote it down in my notebook and says, if I can be a managing director by the time I'm 40 years old, life was great. It's incredible and amazing. I remember my first month in training, I shared my dreams, my goals, or my peers. And someone said to me, Rick, it's impossible. Rick, it's never been done before. Rick, I think you're far stretching where you think you can go. A lot of self-defeated thinking, and quite frankly, it created a lot of doubt in my own mind.
Yeah, it's a lot to work against.
Yep. And it was because of those 6 months of failing over and over again. And then I went through 30 days of probation that I was able to turn my entire career around. And those next 6 months, my first 6 months, I was probation. The next 6 months, I was top of my training class. Then my second year, I was number one in the region. And by my third year at 25 years old, I became the youngest managing director in the country for a Fortune 500 company. And I remember when I was appointed, they asked me, where would I like to build my office? And my answer was simple. I wanted to build it in Chinatown, Manhattan, New York, which is the city I grew up in. And when I built that office, I started with a team of five. And it took me 5 years to build it to a group of almost 50 and eventually became the number one office in the country. So being a managing director was a dream of mine, but I can share with you, it was definitely not an easy journey. In fact, it was probably one of the hardest journeys in my life.
That's something I really want to hear more about because that's a whole new world, right? Like in terms of finance, I think just if you look at statistics, when you look at the senior levels of people, there's really not that many senior levels of finance people. Like having worked in investment banking myself, you'll see a lot of Asians coming from the top schools, from let's say the Ivy Leagues or schools around that tier at the analyst and associate level. But then when it comes to those more senior levels, VP, director, managing director, there really weren't that many. So would really want to hear your take in terms of like how it really felt being one of those only people in the room at that time.
It was a dream come true, but that dream quickly became loneliness. I remember going to my first managing director's conference. And at that time, the average managing director was a 55-plus white male Caucasian. And when I entered that room, I would never forget the amount of admiration to being a part of this incredible group. And I remember meeting some of my peers at that time. And then they asked me, they said, oh, you're the new managing director? And quickly they asked, how old are you? And I shared with them my age, 25 years old. And they remarked was, wow, you're younger than my child. And then I remember at one of the after hour event, you would not believe what people would say when there's a few alcoholic drinks in them. Although they think they're whispering, in fact, they're not whispering, they're speaking quite loud. They said, huh, that guy that just got promoted, they were probably just checking off a box because he's Asian. Not sure if he even deserves it. 3 years, become a managing director, what a mistake. So after hearing some of the feedback from my peers, failing over and over again, you're going to notice the theme. I wanted to be like my peers. I had awe and admiration to one day be as great as my peers. I asked myself, how can I be successful like that? And to share with you, my first year as a managing director, I struggled because I had imposter syndrome. I thought in order to succeed as a managing director, I had to be exactly like everyone else. And because I tried to be like them, playing the game like how they played, I failed. But it was after a year, I realized it was never meant to be that way. I realized that although a lot of people shared with me their opinion of who I am, who I can be, and how I should succeed, their opinions may or may not be true or mattered. So it was my second year as managing director that I said, I'm going to build a group. I'm going to build a team by taking some of my Eastern heritage, like inviting my group to my home and having everyone cook and have a potluck.
Yeah. It's like the secret sauce, right? The secret ingredient that really comes from you, from your background.
Correct. So I tried my best to incorporate my Eastern ways and apply it in Western America. And I realized when I was younger, I used to think my parents from Eastern China was wrong. I used to think my peers from Western America was wrong. But in fact, they were both right. It was me that was wrong. I was using Eastern ways in Western world, which was not applicable. Or Western ways in Eastern world, once again, not applicable. But they're both not wrong. In fact, they're both right. I just did not know when to use them during which scenarios. So my second year as managing director, I started incorporating like a family culture. It did not matter your title. It did not matter your age. It did not matter besides who you are and your character. And I built a team that truly emphasized where we mutually respected each other. And I was proud to say after 5 years, I realized when I was young, at 25 years old as a managing director, I wanted to be like my peers. But 5 years later, when we became the number one office in the country and I was on stage, my peers wanted to hear from me and be like us. So that is my journey of being a managing director.
That's super interesting. There's so many different shifts, like things have come full circle, because as you were saying earlier on, you were, let's say, applying some of the ways of one culture to the other, but it just didn't work out. And so it was through that trial and error that you were able to eventually find that right combination in order to do things. And so that's super interesting, especially I think for even me, like as an Asian American, in that we get to see multiple cultures. And it's a blessing in order to have that, because we can take what's best from both of them and then apply it to what exactly we're doing in our own unique way.
Exactly. That's right. And I think no matter where we are, who we are, and where we come from, we can all learn from each other. I truly believe that. I believe that in life, there is no such thing as ageism, although it's real. Like our parents can learn from us. We can learn from our children. Whether I'm Chinese, I can learn from my wife's family, who's Korean. And especially being Asian Heritage Month, I believe every culture can find its strengths and learn from each other and improve and grow through one another.
That's right. So the point you mentioned about your parents, I really want to talk about that next. So with Asian parents, a lot of times they're really the ones who whatever they say goes. There's that dynamic between the parent and child. So for you, I'm sure you've had a lot of changes from when you were young to then becoming successful and such. I'd love to hear how your relationship with your parents changed throughout that time.
When I was a young child, my parents' relationship with I, and it was incredible for them because I had to listen to them, I was controlled by them, and everything they said I should do and I had to do, I did. But as I was figuring out my own journey, as I became a young adult and I was entering my career path, I started realizing that I had my own opinions. My parents graduated from high school in China. They do not have a college degree. And I always say this, our parents, you know, sacrifice so that one day their children, we, can have a better upbringing, a better education. And now that we are higher educated than our parents, how come that they still tell us what we should or should not do? Isn't that ironic?
That's right. That's a good question.
Right. So early on in my professional career, it was a bit of a struggle. But I realized that the reason why most of people in our generation can't communicate with our parents' generation or our children's generation is because we're not having open dialogue, open communication. So I remember as I grew my career and I started managing over 50 people and plus and more, I really started to understand everyone's different upbringing and perspectives. So I remember one day taking my parents out to dim sum, and it's very important, if you want your parents to start respecting you, you can't keep having your parents pay for you.
That's a key point.
Key point. So I remember I did the bathroom trick and I went to the front cashier and I paid for the dim sum before the bill came. And boy, at first, were my parents upset. But I said, Dad, Mom, why does it matter? Why is it that just because you're older, you have to pay for it? Or why not because I'm younger, I can't pay for it? But more importantly, they started respecting me a little bit more because they realized I was old enough to be mature and responsible to do things such as they were doing. I remember having a really, really interesting conversation with my parents, asking about their childhood, their upbringing. And I realized all they knew growing up in China was hard work. Their parents worked 7 days a week, hundreds of hours, which is why, by definition, they thought that was right. So I say this all the time. There's something called, in my humble opinion, the minority curse. It's up to us one day to determine, are we going to live through this curse, or we're going to be the generation that breaks this curse? And I chose to be the generation that broke the curse. So what I did for my parents was, Dad, Mom, I respect you humbly. I will listen to you wholeheartedly, but I also have my own opinion. And I started teaching them. I started teaching them the ways of the Western world. Start teaching them tax law. Start teaching them what retirement savings is really about. And quite frankly, if you want your parents to respect you, unfortunately, in Asian culture, it's about success. So
yeah,
at 25 years old, when I became a managing director, and quite frankly, I bought my first home before my parents bought their first home at the age that they bought. And then by the time I was 30 years old, I made more money than my parents ever made in their lifetime. And frankly, none of that matters. But more importantly, as my parents saw me find success, they realized I was still the humble son of theirs. But more importantly, with that success, I did righteous things. I gave back to the community. I helped them out. I helped them buy more real estate properties, helped them advance in their careers. And they truly started not telling me what to do. They started respecting me and asking me what they should do.
That's super interesting. This, again, ties back to what you said before about learning from each other. It's regardless of age, everybody has something that they can share. And so just paraphrasing a little bit, summarizing what you were talking about and bringing it full circle, it was that the relationship naturally in the beginning, your parents were the ones who were the ones in charge because you're a kid. And then you became successful and you showed that you were able to not only take care of yourself, but also help them out too. And that really shifted the dynamic to make it on equal footing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you were able to maintain your values too. It was, the relationship was the same in the sense that you are their child, they are the parents, and it really becomes one of equals where there's mutual sharing, mutual respect.
100%. And I would say today, my parents and I have the best relationship we've ever had. More importantly, we're like best friends. Now think about it. Father, mother to child, there is a hierarchy dynamic, right? Children to parents. But when you're best friends, there's an equal respect. And one thing I love about my relationship with my parents is they call me and they seek advice and they're open about it because they're confident that I will give them advice that's in their best interest. And vice versa, I do the same. But it's a relationship that is not demanded, it's earned. I think for many of us that may be listening, how often do we butt heads with our parents? Because our communication style just doesn't work. If you want to communicate with someone where they are open and they're actually communicating back to you in a respectful manner, you can't scream at your parents. In fact, you need to learn and understand who they are and what they're thinking and how to help them. And I finally understood why my parents think the way they think and the sacrifices they made. But more importantly, I truly believe as a parent, and I am a parent myself, I have three kids that are under 6 years old. The day my children can grow to a level that I truly believe they're ready to take on this world is probably one of the proudest, if not the proudest moment in my life. And I was able to achieve that in my parents' eyes. And that's why our relationship is as great as it is today.
That's super interesting. I loved how you touched upon your perspective as a parent now yourself. Just from my standpoint, so I think for me, this is still a work in progress, but it's really helpful for me in understanding like how you did it to give some, let's say, like guidance in my eyes on my situation in terms of like what to look out for, what to like focus on in order to like get to that point. So that's something that is a work in progress and definitely aspiration.
Sure. I think there are two types of people out there, right? There's scarcity mentality and abundance mentality. Now, from my humble opinion, especially knowing and working with Asian families, most Asians have scarcity mentality, just like my parents did. And then I had to show them that they can live an abundant life. I had to show them that their success is not defined by how hard they work or how many hours they put in their job or how much money they make or how much assets they have. Their success is how much they have their own self-love and how much they can spread that love to the people around them. I remember when I had my first son, I told my dad, "Hey, Dad, my son's birthday is next week. You should come to the party." He says, "I have work." I said, "Dad, what do you mean you have work? You're the owner of your own company. Who's going to, you know, scold you for not showing up to work?" And he goes, "Well, son, I don't think you understand. I need to work. I need to make money." I said, "Dad, I don't think you understand. You own 10 real estate properties in the New York City area. You're not in China anymore, and we're not lining up to try to get some food. Stop having PTSD, and you don't need to live through that trauma. But instead, Dad, you should be there for your grandson." And he says, "I will be there. I will leave him all the assets and the generational wealth that I built." And I said, "If you ask my son what's the difference between $1 and $100, he has no clue. He's only 2 years old. You know what he needs? He needs grandfather's guidance to be here so that one day when you're not here and when I'm not here, he can be truly the man that we would be proud of. So Dad, please forget about all what you think is important in life today, society. What matters the most is not giving your children the things you never had. It's about teaching your children the things you were never taught." And this is a quote by Bruce Lee, right? So he took the Eastern Hong Kong ways and came to America, Hollywood, and he merged them together, right? So, and then my father understood. He showed up to my son's birthday, his grandson.
That's great. I loved hearing that. It's interesting because he had good intentions. It's just that he wasn't seeing things in the same way. And so you were there to help explain it to him, and then he understood. And I think that's super powerful.
Yep. And I think especially when most people have scarcity mentality and you want to bring them to abundant mentality, people oftentimes ask me how. Scarcity is aligned with fear. The only thing that can overcome fear is love. If you know someone to have scarcity mentality and live a life of fear and trauma, you show them love. You show them abundancy. You show them generosity. You will show them a whole new life. So it's really about having different perspectives. And I think that's truly incredible. And I hope everyone can find that in their life.
That's right. So this perspective, I think this applies in terms of your activity. Being involved in the Asian American community and helping advance that. This really sticks out to me because I think, like, it's unfortunate for me to say, and thankfully the trend is changing. Like, there are organizations that are helping advance the cause for Asian Americans. Asian Americans really are on an uptrend in terms of helping out each other. But what inspires you to give back now that you've had that success?
What inspires me to give back is simply what I believe is the right thing to do. Now, I recently spoke on another podcast, and I'm so excited to share with your listeners. For all my friends and family that know me, they understand me. For the people that don't know me, I'm quite weird. And it's okay to be weird, to be unique, and to be different, because we're all different. We're all unique in a certain way. You know what's weird? When you're like everyone else. And I say this all the time. In life, do you want to be average, above average, or below average? If you want to be above average, but you do the same thing as everyone else, you're just average. So be different, be weird, be unique, be yourself. So why I want to give back to the Asian community is I did not see enough of that growing up. I think too many Asians have scarcity mentality. And many of us struggled. And as we struggled, and when we get to the certain point in our life that we believe we are successful, guess what the sad part is? We're still climbing and chasing something that's not meaningful, right? If you think about it, when you and I were growing up, Leo, $100 may have been a lot of money. Then when you get to 100, you like 1,000, then 10,000, then 100,000, then 1,000,000, then 10 million, then 100 million. It never ends.
There's always that next number, that next milestone.
And none of that matters. Respectfully, none of that matters. Because I truly believe when you give back and you're generous, then you found the way of living life abundantly. So the reason why I want to give back to the Asian community, because I did not see enough of that growing up. My role models were not Asian. And I want to give back and change the next generation. I wish, my son is 6 years old. My twin daughters are 4 years old. I don't want them to grow up and have imposter syndrome, to look for a role model that looks different from them. I want them to be whatever they want to be. So the reason why I give back is because it's the right thing to do, and I want to change the life of our future generation. But more importantly, here's a weird thought. You know, I don't know about you, but in high school and college, I've had times where I've probably weren't proud of them. Like an example, like in college, after graduating, I may have went to a party and drank a little too much and woke up the next morning and forgot where I was, right? And here's why I'm weird. And I want your listeners to hear this. Now, the next morning when I woke up, I called my friends and I called my family. So I was like, oh my God, how was last night? And they said, last night things were great. You just fell asleep, pass out, ha, ha, ha. But what if, realistically, Leo, I died that night? What if the life that we're currently living right now, and I want you to think deep, because a good friend of mine says this story reminds them of a philosopher. I think it was like Socrates. What if that night I actually passed away because I blacked out and I fell into a train track and I got ran over, as an example?
Yeah.
And today, the life that I'm living right now, the moment I'm having with you, is actually not real. It's a manifestation of what I want. What if that my whole life, that my parents weren't there, was a real moment in my life, but the truth of today's society, where I live today, is just a manifestation of what I want. Like, what if being a 25-year-old managing director or being who I am today is not real? What if my wife, my three kids, is also not real, but it's a manifestation of what I wish a wife would be for me and my three kids? What if success is not real? So what I want to say to you is none of this even matters. Life is about doing the right thing. It's about having fun. Because, see, the truth is, we all die one day, but not many of us truly live. Now, whether we're religious or not religious, and one day when I leave this world, maybe it's like the Matrix, the red pill or the blue pill. But whatever pill you take, you wake up and you just see a scoreboard. And that scoreboard is a reflection of your entire life. And you know what I want? Whoever the scorekeeper says to me, Rick, you lived a great life. Rick, you changed the life of others. Rick, you made a difference in others' lives. So I just want to win in life, and I want others to win. So that's my motivation on giving back and helping our Asian community. Because whether we believe it or not, we are the underdogs. And I want in this lifetime, Asians, females, every one of us, regardless of race, in fact, I want us to just live a life of joy, love, happiness, and help each other. Forget about all these political views, these religious views that are pushing each other to the other spectrum of the world. Why can't we just come together and share love? So that's why I do what I do.
It's all about spreading the love, and that's all about the abundance mentality. I love everything you said. And this ties back to just how we met as well, because circling back to the whole story, I remember this is back before COVID. We were both at an Ascend event. Ascend is an organization for Asian leaders. And we were both there in mentoring, I think they were college students. And from me, like, hearing your story, I then shared with you this Facebook group called Badass Asian Dudes, which was a group of people who really wanted to uplift each other. And even from my perspective, like, I've been inspired by that group. In New York City, there's a small group of us who meet up. One guy who you've met, his name is Tom. He's a person who is further along in his career than someone like me. And it's just motivating to see that. And so that's also why I want to share these stories. It's to show people that there are people like them, inspire them by getting into their brains and seeing what they've gone through to see like how they can make it. And so I think this is just a super important conversation that we're having right now.
Agree. And I think especially that group, Badass Asian Dudes, you're a badass Asian dude when you know that you're badass and you don't need affirmation from people to tell you that you're badass, right? When you live a life that is full, that's when you're badass. Being a part of that group, especially since we're on that topic, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that join, but seeing the way they comment, this way they post, they're not badass.
That's right. It's not all perfect.
It's not all perfect. And I met a lot of them, and I wish, you know, I had the time in the world to help all of them. And some of them, they just need a little bit of guidance. They just need a little bit of uplifting. And quite frankly, they needed exactly what I needed when I was 21 years old. They needed to fail a little harder and more. They needed to step out of their comfort zone, per se. But if you could step out of your comfort zone, you could also step back in. And too many badass Asian dudes, or self-proclaimed badass Asian dudes, are honestly never badass because they're always damn comfortable. Complacency is the opposite of success, right? And I tell people this all the time. The opposite of success is not failure. The opposite of success is not trying or giving up.
That's right.
It's giving up. So it's about embracing that journey. So if you want to be badass, fail more. Fail more, but as you fail, get right back up and learn from your experience. And, you know, I've met some incredible people in my lifetime, and the ones that are truly badass are the ones that failed more than everyone else.
That's right. And then this, just in terms of summarizing everything, it is about that abundance mindset too, because for people who do fail, they're not afraid of failure because they're able to get back up. Like, knowing that they have that confidence, that's when they're able to just live generously in all of that. So I just love the conversation that we've been having.
100% agree. And I find that a word of advice for anyone that's listening, especially Asian people, I'm an introverted only child that grew up that didn't have many friends because my parents thought the only thing that was important to me was going to school 7 days a week and studying a lot of math. Well, math helped me because now I'm in finance. But when I was in finance and as I was meeting more people, I was awkward. I couldn't spark a conversation. So therefore, if I continued that journey that I chose to walk down, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. So to share with you, I had to challenge myself, not step out and into my comfort zone, but I had to expand my comfort zone. So here's a real life story that I did. I realized and identified why I wasn't good enough to be the best I could be. So back then, I used to live in Brooklyn, and to get to Manhattan, it was a 30-minute train ride. Mm-hmm. So I committed to myself that every single day for 30 days, I would go walk into a train, go up to a random stranger, spark a conversation, and exchange contact info. And I cannot get off the train until I successfully fulfilled my task and mission. Now, when I first did that train ride, the sad part was I kept missing my 30-minute train ride stop because the first 10 minutes I was scared. I couldn't get into the zone and I had to psych myself out and I missed my stop and I was late for work.
Yeah, it's really not easy. It is just quite a big undertaking.
Yep. But after a few days, I started getting the hang of it. I started building habits, activity, discipline. My body started learning and understanding how to expand my comfort zone. So then the second, third week, I started doing it within that 30-minute train ride. And then the last week of those 30 days, I was able to spark a conversation, exchange number within 5 minutes. But after 30 days, what was special was I was no longer the same Rick Hugh. I changed. And that is probably one of the best compliments you could ever receive. I still remember many years ago, I bumped into a middle school friend. And I was hanging out with him, just catching up for a cup of coffee. He said, "Rick, you've changed." But he said it in a way where it made me feel bad. And then it took me a little while. I was like, "Well, what do you mean I changed?" And I thought to myself, it was the best compliment of my life. We are supposed to change. We are supposed to evolve as humans. If you are exactly who you were when you were 5 years old, 15 years old, 25 years old, and never change in life, well, that's a problem. So I believe of evolution of humans. Always get better. Even if you're a 10 out of 10, well, here's where I'm scary. I mentally say I'm a 5 out of 10, and I never stop progressing and growing. So that's something I want to leave with the audience.
That sounds perfect. Some phrases, you know, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backward. Change is the only constant. Become comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Since we share a lot of mutual similar stories, I'm not sure how many people are listening. Growing up, my parents wanted me to be a doctor, lawyer, or an engineer, as if those were the only three professions available out there for Asians. With all due respect, I think we've really saturated that marketplace. We've done a great job. Now, people always ask me, it's like, "Hey, Rick, how are you raising your children?" I'm not raising them to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer. I'm raising them to be happy. Very important. I'm raising them to be kind, generous, and a contributor to society. Now, for everyone that's listening, whether you're Asian or not, whether you're a minority or not, whether you're female or not, it doesn't matter. if I had to raise my children to be one profession, it's to be a politician. Let's change the world together. So I'll say this on your podcast, and I mean it. Within my lifetime, I will leave the world of finance. I'm not sure when my task is done, because I believe there's so much more I have to do. I serve over 1,300 families at our firm. We're ranked top 100 by Forbes, top 10 in New York State. But I have a commitment and a promise I made to 1,300 families to get them to retirement. And I have a team of 11 that I'm going to make sure they retire comfortably too. But when the time is right, I will run for president of the United States. And whoever is listening, if you believe that life can be better, if you believe where we live right now, our world can be better, I encourage you all to run for politics. I encourage you all to vote. I encourage you all to say, I want to be president of the United States. Because I'll tell you this, growing up as a 5'6" Asian male, I thought I had a better chance of being an NBA basketball player, which is impossible. I have no elevation or jump shot or dribble. But I never thought I could be president of the United States because I've never seen an Asian male become president. Now, out of my three kids, I asked them what they want to be when they grow up, and two out of my three kids said, Daddy, Mommy, I want to be president of the United States because, Daddy, you keep saying that to me. And I believe they can't. And you know what's the best part? I have three kids, my son and my twin daughters. It's my twin daughters that said they want to be president of the United States. So let's change the world together.
Let's change the world together. All right, Rick, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, and this has been just such a rewarding conversation. Really, thank you for all the work that you do, and I'm super excited for what's in store for you.
Thank you, Leo. Incredibly fun. Thank you for everything, and happy to be here and give back to everyone that's listening.